John, I'll say thank you very much for doing the interview with me today.
Oh, my pleasure.
First I want to ask is, what first got you into music?
Wow, that's a real fundamental beginning with the essentials. I wasn't prepared for that question. What has gotten me into music? Well, I mean, I guess, you know, I'm kind of witnessing this thing with my son right now, who's a teenager, where he has suddenly decided that the Beatles are, you know, the greatest thing in the universe, and he's deeply, deeply interested in the entire Beatles catalog. And he spent, you know, the first decade and a half of his life doing something I kind of thought was something other kids, you know, in the culture were more, where they were more or less at, which is that music seemed to be less important and less interesting to kids of the current generation. It seemed to me like when I was growing up that music defined everything for everyone, that it was some very fundamental aspect of everyone's identity. And it apparently was kind of a new thing. Like this was a generational thing that you used music to decide who you were, in a sense. I thought maybe this idea had sort of disappeared in the culture, or it faded away. That like kids nowadays are not as obsessively interested in music as a means of rooting themselves, and in fact it seemed like there's also these other things that are culturally important now that weren't when I was growing up, like food for some reason is something that that young people are much more interested in now, and a friend of mine was saying that, remarking that it seemed like food had taken over the role of music. This is a roundabout way of saying that when I was a kid, music was who you were, you know, that was how you decided where you were at in the culture, and it seemed to be a universal thing, and I don't know whether it is anymore, although it's fascinating to me that all of a sudden my son is obsessively interested in music the way I was when I was his age.
I see that you and John Flansborough have been doing They Might Be Giants for 33 years. Do you think all that time has had an impact on how you see music?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have predicted that I'd be in the same band for this long, but I think that I do tend to see music. I look around and see other bands kind of partly through the filter of what I'm doing. I suppose that's right. I don't think that's necessarily a good thing. I mean, I would like to have a kind of an amateur's outlook whenever possible. I think that's a very good approach to people, to being interested in cultural things, is to not think of yourself as a sort of expert or a professional, I guess. You know, I don't think there's an advantage to having a professional perspective. But I would have to say that yes, it has influenced the way I look at other people's work.
Okay, because a lot of the music that you do with They Might Be Giants is written sort of half and half with you and the other John. How do you get your ideas for your songs?
Right, yeah. Well, that's one of those questions we've been asked a lot, and you would think we would have a coherent answer to that question by now. But in some ways, maybe deliberately, I think we've avoided having a sort of straightforward method, because I think we are interested in the sort of mysterious origins of, you know, everything that is good, you know, that it seems to come from nowhere, and that if you had a method or a formula for cooking up material, it would be much less interesting, and it might even fail, I think, on that basis. So that's, you know, probably a little bit of a superstition on our part, that we don't want to jinx what we're doing by making it too methodical. But yeah, I think we tend to work very intuitively, or at least I do. I, you know, and we each have our habits. You know, I have a way of working where I try and come up with a lot of ideas in a short time, just go from one to the next and not spend a lot of time on any one thing. And that's one way that I can get stuff done, because eventually by doing that, I come up with one or two ideas that I like a lot, and then I'll work on those.
Okay, I want to talk about Birdhouse in Your Soul, which just took the world by storm. It was very popular, and still today is used quite a lot and is featured just everywhere. Did you expect that kind of impact when you made that song?
No, I mean, I think we kind of had a feeling this was the closest thing to a single that we had for that period of time. So we, you know, it was a slow process. I came up with a demo, and it was a kind of an oddball beat, you know, because it's got the snares on the on beats instead of the off beats. And things like, there were things like that that made it seem like this is not really a sort of a standard pop song. And then we got Langer and Winstanley involved in the production of it. And they, I think to their credit, they saw that as an asset. They really liked the upside down drum part and other things about it. They were kind of encouraging us to go further down that route. And then by that time, we'd kind of decided, yeah, this is sort of the single, so we're getting the big producers to come in and help us with it. But, you know, we never really knew what to expect with any of it. We for the first few albums, we were not even sure how viable the whole project was, I think. Like, where can this go? We didn't know. In America, we were not really tuned into the fact that there was college radio, but that turned out to be a great platform for us. And then we were very surprised when the single took off in the UK. That was a delightful and completely unexpected, and, you know, internationally. And so that, you know, that obviously gave us some standing, and we were able to kind of establish you know, our own identity, kind of like, this is who we are and this is what we do. And you know, I think over time, and this is really true now, as you said, 33 years down the road, we kind of felt like we were enough of a brand that we didn't have to explain ourselves, you know. So that was the advantage of getting all that airplay and all that attention, was that we kind of felt like we could just do our thing, and people understood that it was us, and had already had some sense of what we were up to.
Yeah, because the song was really big, especially in the UK, and then you also had the album Flood as well, which was very popular. So all them songs, they were all very different, all quite... I mean, how would you describe the album for someone who was listening to it for the first time?
Flood?
Yeah.
Well, it's you know, it's something we did a quarter century ago. So it's you know, it's a little bit, it's kind of slipped out of my hands to some extent, I guess. You know, what the intent and what the meaning of it is now, it's sort of hard for me to nail down. I mean, maybe, you know, again, like I generally haven't been in the position of trying to explain it. You know, we obviously like the music to speak for itself, but I think we were trying to do something that was personal, felt personal, but also we like the craft of songwriting. We like, you know, songs and songwriting, and that's very, you know, that was very much where we planted our flag was in the world of the song. There was a lot of pop music or music out at that time that was establishing all these other philosophies, you might say. Like a lot of stuff was very defiantly kind of anti-song in a way. There was a sort of a, you know, idea of a riff that repeats and then somebody singing over that, and there wasn't so much of the chorus verse bridge idea, which was, you know, even in 1990 that was pretty old-fashioned idea. You know, that came out of, you know, listening to the Beatles and stuff that was even earlier in the 20th century. So I suppose that was something that we felt like we wanted to, you know, make a point about, which is we really like songs. We're kind of basically old-fashioned in one regard. And then in another way, we felt like we were doing something modern because we didn't have a band. We were just two guys in the studio playing with computers and whatever instruments we could play.
Another one of your songs, before I talk about the new album, another one of your songs that I really do enjoy is Boss of Me. And that was introduced to me through the show Malcolm in the Middle. So was that song created before the show, or did you create it for the show?
Well, John Flansburgh was the author of the song, and my understanding is he had a song with different lyrics, and when we got the call to do the Malcolm theme, he just reappropriated it for Malcolm. So he, you know, he just rewrote the lyrics based on a kind of a, you know, a lyrical idea that he thought was appropriate, and then the single version we came out with was kind of expanded. So the original version was about 30 seconds long, just for the TV show. That's what they'd asked us to make, and then we expanded it to make it into a song that, you know, seemed more like an official song rather than just a very short theme. You know, it's an oddball one in our repertoire. We don't tend to play it live because it's sort of this special purpose song. But I guess it's open ended enough that it doesn't scream TV theme song, because it doesn't mention the show in the lyrics or anything.
And also, as well, that was your first Grammy win as well for that song.
Correct, yes. That was the first Grammy, yes.
So that must have been quite... Was that shocking to see that actually become a winner for you? Was you quite glad to see that come through?
Well, yeah. Here's the thing. I think we kind of felt like the Grammy, again, not to be like completely cold-blooded, but it was very practical for us to have to win a Grammy for some... for work that we'd done for somebody else, because we wanted to do that. We wanted to do more of that kind of work, and we needed to kind of be legitimate, you know, like establish that we could do it and we were officially okay, you know, so that we'd get hired by other TV and movie and commercial people. So it was really very practical. I think the thing is, like, our friends, our close friends, were less interested in whether or not we were Grammy winners than just the actual work we were doing. You know, they didn't need it to be ratified by the you know, an award ceremony. I think, you know, to be truthful, we were sort of maybe cynical about what the Grammys represented, and we didn't like a lot of stuff that won Grammys, so we kind of maybe were snobbish about it. I think we got a lot less snobby after we won the Grammy, you know. We were like, oh yeah, no, the Grammys are very important after we got one. But like I said, it was a very practical thing. It wasn't, you know, and my mom was happy that we'd gotten it. But I don't think it didn't feel like this is like personally what we have always dreamed of, you know, to certify ourselves. Like, it was not it was not the ultimate honor for us. I think we felt like maybe we were the ultimate judge of whether we were doing a good job artistically. Yeah. And it was mainly a professional honor, I think.
The new album, Glean, has been out for a few weeks now. I've got to say, I really enjoy it. It's a really great, fun album. And you actually had quite an interesting marketing campaign. You were releasing songs via the Dawa song, which was quite different, actually. I've never seen anyone do that before.
Yeah. Well, it was different for us, but I think it maybe was partly motivated by the sense that people consume music differently now, and I don't even know exactly how people want to consume music, but one thing seems pretty clear, and that's that the album format is no longer the main thing in people's minds. You know, they don't. A lot of listeners don't think in terms of albums at all, and they buy individual songs or they listen to individual songs. They don't even pay for them, and there's a whole different culture in a way about how you consume music. So we were kind of thinking, well, we could try something completely different in the light of that. You know, maybe coming out with a new song every week was another equally viable way to present the music rather than just all at once on and off. You know, like I said, we're kind of old fashioned at heart. I still like LPs. I like the idea of two sides. You know, it's almost like there's an intermission, you know, when you listen to an old album, and that's something that formally I still am fond of that idea, but truthfully that's not how anybody really listens to music anymore. It's much more of a pick and choose. You go online and find the song that you want to hear, and then there's some, you know, a few specialists who listen to the entire album, but even then they might not think of it as a coherent beginning to end experience. You know, it's more like here's a collection of music.
Because the first song I heard of it was the track Erase, which I thought was really good, and then when I got to hear the whole album, like I said, I enjoyed it. It was really good, and a lot of the reviews I've seen for it have been very positive as well. Do you read the reviews that you get from your music?
Well, I'm tempted to read them, and occasionally our publicist will send us things. But I think it's dangerous, because if you start believing the good reviews, then you also have to take on the bad ones. And that can be very confusing and distracting. Like I said, I think we want to try and keep a clear head about what we think we're doing. That's what we started out doing. We've always kind of felt like we were going to be the best judge of whether we're doing a good job. I mean, it would be interesting and important to know if everyone suddenly hated us. You know, obviously that would be very important information to know about. But I don't want it to mess me up in a way. You know, I like the sense that, you know, you kind of know when you're on the right track, I think, mostly, and we try not to get too relaxed about it, because I think we're now kind of in competition with ourselves in a way. We have this long back catalog, and we don't want to start turning out mediocre versions of stuff we've already done, you know. So we're trying not to look over our shoulders too much. Instead, just concentrate on coming up with new stuff and you know, trying to keep the standard up.
No, I completely understand. So the album's out now, and I take it that the Dawa song's going to continue. You're going to continue doing this for a little while.
Yeah, we've got the rest of the year. We're not even halfway through the year yet. So luckily, we have a lot of backlog. We've got most of the year lined up, but we still are. We're going to do some more recording this month. Actually, we're going in to the studio in a few weeks to record some more songs. And the idea is, you know, I think at this point we could probably finish out the year with what we've got, but we want to make sure we've got the best stuff we can, and we have the opportunity to record and write and record some more. So we're going to be doing that over the summer.
Brilliant. As well as your recording, are you going to be taking in some live shows as well? You're going to be doing some touring?
We've done a little bit already. We played in the month of April and into May in the United States, and we have a sort of a tentative plan to go to the UK and also to Australia in the fall. But the Australia thing is the only thing that's kind of booked at this point, and we're still feeling out the rest of the shows. I think we'll also be playing next year a little bit too, at the beginning of next year. This has been a relatively light year because we were concerned that we had enough time to do all the recording we need to do. So we didn't do as much touring as we've done in the past. You know, in 2013 we spent more than half a year on the road, and so this year has been pretty easy for touring, which I like because I'm, you know, like being home with my family.
Okay, John, I've got one last question. And if you ever got the opportunity to work with anyone in music, so any singer, any producer, or any writer, who would you choose and why would you choose that person?
Oh, well, you mean living or dead or someone who's...
Yeah, it can be anyone you want. It's your personal choice.
I don't know. I mean, I'm always curious about, like, musicians from the ancient times because musical practice has obviously changed. You know, and the idea of popular music is so much about mass culture, which is so different now. It's always changing. I always wonder about the people who wrote songs 100 years ago, you know, kind of what the approach would have been back then, and what your sense of what was motivating you. So I don't know. I mean, I don't even particularly in mind, but it would be interesting to meet, you know, someone like Irving Berlin and see what makes him tick, you know.
Fantastic. Well, John, first I'm going to say once again a massive thank you. It's been really great to chat to you, and I've got to say this has almost been a dream come true. I've always wanted to learn more about you.
Oh, that's very nice. Thanks so much. Yeah, well, I'm you know, I'm glad you liked the album, and we will get out to the UK hopefully very soon and play all these new songs.
That's great, and I can't wait to see you guys back in the UK performing live.
Cool, man. Great. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to it too.
John, once again, thank you very much. Take care and goodbye.
Very good. Nice speaking with you. Okay, bye now.